Welcome back to the Drain Plug Podcast. I got a special guest in the podcast studio, aka the Tiny Boat Nation store that we turn into a podcast studio. And Mike Lopez here from Arizona, the OG TB Nation, right here.
Yeah, he's giving me a whole lot of credit, but you know, it's nice to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you. Good to have somebody to talk to since my Gingy friend is missing.
Yep, he's missing, and who knows when he'll be back.
He'll be back soon.
Next week.
You know, he'll be back. Yeah. So we're going to talk about some of the common questions that we get here in the shop and that you get on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook about turf and carpet. And I want to start with the most common one that we get, which is, I got carpet in my boat, and I want to get it out and put turf. How do I do that?
Okay. It's a great question. So are you ready to deal with what? It's either going to take a lot of time or a lot of money. Or a little bit of both.
Yeah.
But essentially, if you're going to do it yourself, if the carpet glue is fairly new and not hardened for decades, you can get it off with xylene.
Or acetone.
Acetone is probably the preferred way. You know, Nate, we talked earlier about how our partner Nate, he saturates the whole deck in acetone.
Yep.
Then put Saran wrap over it so it can't evaporate, because you know how acetone is.
Yep.
Leaves it there for I don't know how long, but
a few minutes, enough for it.
Just
to
a few minutes,
yeah.
Not hours.
No. You don't have to wait that long.
Okay, well then apparently that works fantastic to get. Otherwise, you know, and possibly if it's harder and acetone doesn't work, because once it solidifies, solvent doesn't take it off. And
yeah.
So like maybe an oscillating tool and an orbital sander.
No, we've used acetone too, and I like it a little bit better than xylene, because xylene tends to gum up some of the carpet glues. So yeah. When you start scraping, it's like it's literally like scraping gum off the bottom of your shoe, and it's like it's never ending.
Yeah, it can't be the only thing you use. It just seems to be in the moment. If you can get the adhesive to reactivate, it's new, you can scrape it right off.
Yeah.
And so.
Now, depending on what you're going to treat your surface with, your wood surface with, there's a couple different ways you can go about basically refinishing the wood and getting it ready for HydroTurf. The one that I like the best and the one that Nate likes the best is using like a bedliner type material. We like either Monster Liner or Raptor Liner. I prefer the Monster Liner, but it's a little bit more expensive, and it works better if you spray it. The Raptor Liner is available everywhere. Like, you can get it on Amazon. O'Reilly sells it. There's a bunch of different places you can get it from. And you don't necessarily need to buy a spray gun to spray it. The two-part spray gun, spray cans, they got the activator built into it. You just push a button on the bottom. So it's still a true two-part, and it's real durable when it's done. It just it only comes in black, I think, is all the colors they got. Monster Liner's got, like, every color under the sun. But I prefer it that way, because we don't have to get all the glue off. You just have to sand it enough to where it looks semi-smooth.
Yeah.
And when you spray that textured, you know, bed liner over the top of it, it makes all that glue just disappear. We've done quite a few boats. I know Nate's done a ton of them, where they'll like an old tracker that's got wood decks but aluminum floor, like a cockpit floor. We'll strip the entire boat out, sand it really good, and spray the whole entire thing with either Aqua Traction is what he uses, and we use a Raptor Liner, and then stick the turf right over the top of it. It looks great.
Yeah, the non-skid look, or what do you call it, the Rhino Liner look? It looks really good on all the walls. Yeah. It looks good on the floor. And if you two-tone that with HydroTurf or EVA foam of your choice, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of is his go-to way now, huh?
Yeah, well, it's ours, too.
It's ours, go-to.
Yeah, it makes life easier, because you don't have to spend as much time scraping glue. You can just get a belt sander or a big orbital sander and just grind
it
down.
Glue doesn't have to be all the way off.
No. We actually left a lot of it on.
If it's, like, sticky, though...
No,
like,
yeah, that like needs
new,
to come
it
off.
It has to come off. But if it's hardened... and a lot of time it is, because you're restoring a boat from the 1980s or something, that glues, just sand it flush.
Yeah.
And paint over it. Now, the lid needs to be painted anyways.
Then the method that you've used, and I've seen Anthony do it, Ryan's done it a lot, is the paint, the oil-based enamel.
Yeah.
Well, tell them about that process.
Well, it's just the same kind of same thing as what you're doing with the Rhino Liner. It's just not textured. And I think it probably maybe stick a little better. Because the EVA foam backing, like the adhesive backing, it likes the smoother surfaces. It likes smooth. If there's texture, but it's still smooth, it still will stick to it. It's when it's textured really hard and there's a lot of porous openings it doesn't quite like that. It'll still stick to it, believe it or not. It'll stick to your bare garage floor.
Yes,
it with will. No prep, and it'll have a hard time getting it off. So
we'll talk more about that in a second. Yeah. But so when you do the oil based enamel, you just basically just get the surface smooth enough to where you can paint over it and let that oil based enamel just kind of soak into the wood.
Yeah, you fill up any porous holes or cracks. Like say if you got an old deck on your boat and it's wood. And there's nothing really wrong with it. It's just the carpet's done. It's oxidized. It's shredding off. And you can see the old glue. You can resurface that piece of wood. You don't have to go get a new one. Just resurface it and repaint it.
Yeah.
Especially, like repaint it with black oil-based enamel. It can be flat or it can be gloss. I think it'll probably stick a little bit better to the gloss.
Yeah.
But it sticks just fine to the flat. I just found that out. So that's the easiest, cheapest way to get it done. And then if you really want to make it last forever, you would use epoxy of some sort.
Now, how many coats do you normally have, like, average do you normally have to do? Like, two or three? Or
I use paint thinner, so it'll get in there really good. And then one or two coats of that. But then you can tell physically, you can tell that it's not really smooth on the top. Mm-hmm. So I'll go ahead and do a standard coat of paint over, because then it's the consistency of, like, syrup.
Yeah.
And so it'll just kind of fill in better and lay out better with, like, a third final coat.
I have never thinned Rust-Oleum with paint thinner. I always do it with acetone.
I didn't know you could thin it with acetone.
Yeah, actually, you can do it with MEK or acetone, but I've always just used acetone because we keep it around the shop all the time.
Huh.
I never even thought to use paint thinner.
Well, I mean, that thins paint.
Yeah, well, that's what it's made for. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. So if you're going back to the discussion we were having earlier about what turf sticks to, that's another really common question we get is people that have boats like the Havoc or Gator Tails or these new Grizzly Trackers that have the non-skid surfaces. We had a lot of people call and ask, how do you get turf to stick to that, or will it even stick to that?
Yeah, it will.
The answer is absolutely yes, it will. We all do it a little bit different, and there's no right or wrong way to do it, really. You just got to make sure that if it's a very rough surface, like in a Havoc or a Gator Tail style boat, you're going to need something to kind of help it stick, but also fill in some of those pores. And you can do that a couple different ways. You can sand it a little bit just to kind of knock down some of those high spots. But what we've found works best is either 3M Primer 94 or contact cement. And we do a lot of contact cement here. We just take it and put it in a foam roller, you know, little tray.
Like the can of it?
Yeah, we'll take like half a can and dump it in a foam roller tray, and then we use a foam roller and just roll out. Like, you got to do it section by section.
How long are you letting it activate before you put the turf?
It depends. If it's cold, 3 to 5 minutes. If it's hot, like usually within a minute or two, it's set up. And what you can do is you can actually, once you roll it on there, give it a couple minutes, and then you can touch it. When you see it start to spider web, like it'll stick to your finger, and it'll be real thin. It looks like a spider web coming out of your finger almost.
Well, if you roll that on any deck, I don't care what it is, what can, like, the turf is going to stick to the contact cement, and it's a permanent bond. Like, you have one shot.
Yes, that is one thing I will caution people. If you're going to do either the Primer 94 or the contact cement, you have one shot to get it on right. If it is not straight or you're off a little bit, it's not coming back off. Like, you might as well just burn the boat and claim the insurance money.
I have also used 3M spray adhesive.
And you did it on some lids, didn't you?
Yeah, I did on some lids where the underneath of a lid, where it initially stuck, but then it started coming off after a hot season of weather, for whatever reason. And I just re-prepped the surface with the alcohol and then sprayed the 3M spray adhesive. I think, I don't know what it's called.
I think it's called Super 90. There's two different ones. There's a green one. The one I'm familiar with is the red one that has silver letters on it. And I want to say it's the Super 90 is the brand of it.
I would say it was the red can, and I spray that in real carefully and let it set up for a few seconds, let it activate, and then that turf never wanted to move. So
you
got to
be careful, though. That stuff sprays everywhere.
It does, yeah.
You need to tape off any surfaces that you don't want
and put that nozzle very close, or it'll just spray glue.
Yeah.
And it's glue, and it's not, it doesn't like to get off off things. Yeah.
You can get it off. I've got it on some stuff that I didn't want it on the boat before. Acetone seems to work pretty good on it, but you got to get it quick. Like, you can't let it sit because once it sets up, you're back to scraping and sanding again. The other question that I get a lot is about sticking to bare aluminum. Like, should you sand the aluminum first?
You probably don't even have to prep the aluminum.
We just wipe it with acetone.
You still do it, but just for longevity and best practice, but That's where it sticks the best to aluminum.
It's kind of scary how good it sticks to aluminum. Like, we've had some pieces where we were doing, like, a custom boat where we had pre-cut CNC routed turf, and I accidentally laid it down when I wasn't really ready. You ain't getting it back up. We usually have to, like, chip it out or tear it out and get a new piece cut.
It's that smooth surface, I think. There's nothing smoother than aluminum.
Yeah.
Then it just... So if you're going to do it in aluminum, don't do it in the sun ever.
No. Never in direct sunlight.
And if you're doing it in a garage, hopefully it's a decent temperature in the garage. If the aluminum is hot or even like warm to touch and you do what Chris just told you he did, there's a good chance you won't get it up.
Yeah.
Now, if it's a little colder in there, then you have some wiggle room.
Yeah.
But if you leave it on there for too long, like 30 seconds, a minute, especially if you press on it, then you activate the adhesive. And also, if you warm it up, you activate the adhesive.
Yeah.
So you get that nice little wiggle room to kind of place it. And then once you have it where you need it, then and you press it down, that's it.
Yeah. We'll come back to more about turf in a minute, but I want to hear from you more about the carpet installation, because you've got a lot more experience with carpet than I do.
Yeah.
If you're a new guy new person that's getting into boats and you're thinking about going back with that classic style of carpet, what's some tips and suggestions you can give people? Because I know that carpet is a little bit more tedious of an install process.
Only to get the old glue up, but here's the whole thing. It's actually not that bad, mainly because if you already had a boat that was carpeted, the lids are already made for the carpet. So, like, if you go and strip off, like, all the carpet off your old lids, you'll notice that they're physically smaller and they don't sit as well in the opening. They're just big gaps. It's because they were gapped and fitted for carpet to begin with. So installing carpet on them, that's what they're there for. And then again, you don't have to take all the glue off.
Yeah.
You just got to sand it, flat, make sure there's no uneven spots. You just got to get the carpet off. And that can be done with an oscillating tool or with the acetone method if the glue's fresh enough. And then, then it's just getting a roll of Sparta carpet from us.
Yeah, we sell Sparta carpet.
And 20-ounce preferred, because 20-ounce is snagless. It's really hard for the hooks to get in there. And it is a little bit tedious, but
That's a great question. I'm glad you brought that up, because I get that question a lot, is what's the difference between the 16-ounce and the 20-ounce, and what's the difference between the cut pile and what's the other one, the non-cut pile? Is that what it's called?
I actually don't know the difference between the cut pile.
Well, I know because I had to look it up.
So, okay, tell us before.
Well, the cut pile doesn't have the loops in it like the other one does, so it doesn't snag.
Oh, well then, would make, okay.
Yeah, the cut pile has a, I don't remember exactly how it is, but it doesn't snag lures. That's why it's preferred over. But what's the difference between the 16 and the 20 ounce?
Mainly, I think the 16 ounce is not snagless, like at all. So you get a lure down there, it's going to snag into it, and then it's also not as firm on it's not as comfortable on your feet. Like 20-ounce carpet feels pretty good on your feet. So
now it has a backing on it, doesn't it?
It's got a rubber backing. Yeah, it's not, but that doesn't really provide. Mainly, it's the carpet that provides the comfort.
So the rubber's just to kind of hold all the carpet strands together.
Yeah, because if it didn't have that, then it would just fray off in a season. Gotcha. So that what makes it marine grade is that backing. You like ever get bunk carpet? It's got that rubber backing. Yeah. So the rubber backing is crucial to have. Otherwise.
Is there any like specialized installation tools that you need for carpet, or are you just pretty much just razor blades and a rolling pin of some type?
I had like a bunch of rulers on hand or pieces of wood and then clamps, because when you're trying to wrap that carpet around the hatches, you need it to clamp in place for a minute long enough for the glue to set up. And then once it was set up, then you could take it all off. But wrapping it around the hatches is the hardest. Putting it on the deck was easy. Fitting it in between the grooves. And then also, but if you're using brand new 20-ounce carpet, you might have to give it a haircut. So you'll need shavers, like cheap shavers.
Yeah. Like clippers.
Yeah, clippers that you don't mind ruining, because that carpet is going to be really tough on the clippers. Make sure you oil them.
So you use that just for like tight areas where
because there's spots where, brand new carpet will definitely bind, and just giving it a haircut on the crucial end so it closes correctly and also looks better. I mean, it's you're likely going to have to do it on the vertical edges of the hatch is right. Probably we're going to have to give it a haircut.
So on like the big areas when you're putting out the carpet glue and you spread it out, does it take a long time for that to set up and dry?
It depends on what glue you have. Like if you get that white Elmer's glue looking pasty stuff, yeah. I think it takes a little bit of time, especially if it's cold. And then if you use like the indoor outdoor carpet glue, like that brown, that tan, or
someone that we sell, it's like number 66 or
that
something.
That stuff probably doesn't need a whole lot of time. The stuff is tacky right out of the thing. So that stuff needs no time to act. Just spread it.
Now, I've seen a lot of people.
Well, actually, it does need a little bit of time.
Yeah, I know it takes some time. I know it's not an instant setup, but like I see a lot of people use contact cement on edges and like where you have to roll it up underneath the hatches.
Well, that'd probably be the better way. I have never done that. That's smart. I should have done it.
I actually learned that from Anthony.
That's smart. That's probably a better way. You won't be fighting it like you're fighting the other carpet glue. Because carpet glue, nothing sticks better than contact cement.
Yeah,
like it's king.
No, I know I was watching one of your older videos a while back where you were doing some carpet and you were using spray adhesive in a few places. Is that something you still recommend or have you?
I don't know. I must have been desperate. spray adhesive works too.
It was like a teal green colored carpet you were putting in a bass boat.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it works.
It does.
Have an arsenal.
So just be prepared.
I mean, some things work better than others. It just depends on the lid or the moment, but I would try to. I think that getting a bunch of cans of spray adhesive is not very efficient. It's probably very expensive.
Spray adhesive does.
I would definitely use that only for like rough, hard edges where you're really having a hard time getting that glue to bind. Like mainly around the hatch lids. The hatch lids are gonna be the hardest thing to carpet. Everything else fairly simple. It's pretty simple.
Now another tip that I've learned from watching some carpeting videos because we just don't do carpet here.
Yeah,
and we'll talk about why in a little bit, but. I've seen the importance of laying the carpet out and making sure that when you cut your pieces that they're all facing the same direction. So, you wouldn't want to cut a piece and then turn the carpet 90 degrees for the hatch that goes right next to it because you can actually see the difference.
I'm kind of torn about it.
Can you really tell a difference or is that just YouTube myth?
No, you absolutely can. But here's the whole thing. Are you going to, really go buy a whole new sheet of carpet just because you're, just because one piece of your carpet on the deck casts a shadow a different way, and a lot of people will go buy a carpet because it affects their OCD.
Yeah,
but that's a disorder in the DSM for a reason, and so I don't honestly think it's ridiculous that you would, but people will do it. And then so I personally know if I have a piece of carpet that it's going to fit this hatch, but it's not facing the right way, I will still use it.
Okay,
because I'm not spending another 160.
Yeah, carpet. Hour. Can
yeah, get, I'm not. I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, no, and I have never done it. And I've gotten flack from it in videos. And, I already said, that's how I feel about it.
So you might be able to help me out on this one because I get this question a lot when people call the shop or email. What's the best way to measure how much carpet you're going to need for your boat? You got it built, where everything's laid out at.
I would add 5 feet.
So the length of your boat and then add 5 feet extra?
Yeah, because you got to think that you're not accounting for
vertical walls and stuff.
The vertical walls, you're also not accounting for a lot of the carpet you're just going to waste when you cut it.
Yeah.
When you cut that contour of the deck, that carpet's useless. I don't know where you're going to use it. And then you might want some additional footage of carpet for the interior. Because most boats that are carpeted on top are carpeted underneath. And so, but ultimately, it's way cheaper. You can't beat the amount of carpet you can get for the price.
Here's a real world example. I had a customer call one time and he was asking, he's like, my front deck from outside edge to outside edge is 54 inches. Should I get the 6 foot carpet or should I go ahead and get it to 8 just so I have some extra?
8.
You think that there's really that much
extra? Yeah, when you cut it, I tell you, it so much of it becomes unusable almost immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And you just got to throw it away. There's a lot of it gets wasted.
Yeah.
Only so it's just, it's true. You're not just going to piece that together and wrap a hatch with two pieces of triangular carpet. You can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, you could. It ain't going to look great. But yeah.
Do you have any other carpet installation tips or anything that we didn't cover
before? No, I know that we don't spend a whole lot of time doing it anymore here in the Tiny Boat Nation because we're kind of turf fanboys. Carpet really is still good. Sometimes it's still the best solution, especially if you have a climate where it doesn't mildew and stink.
Yeah.
And as long as you take care of it and you keep it covered so it doesn't oxidize and start falling apart, it's still pretty good. And I still like the way 20-ounce snagless carpet looks on a boat.
Yeah.
I really do.
So I'm glad you brought up about us being fanboys. I want people to understand that we are not team HydroTurf or team any turf for no reason, and not just because we sell it. There's a reason that we sell it. It's because we have a preference for it for several reasons. I'll tell you mine real quick, and then I definitely want to hear yours. I do not like the way carpet smells in a bass boat. It does not take, you know, very many fishing trips before you need to get in there and, like, physically clean it, because it will start to smell like Zoom fishing lures. It starts to smell like Spike It garlic dip and fish. And it just seems like that smell never really goes away. So that's my number one reason why I don't like carpet. My number two is I've never been on a carpeted boat in the, like, heat of the summer that wasn't uncomfortable barefooted.
Yes.
I always feel like I need to wear shoes.
That's fact.
And where I fish at a lot, I like to get out of the boat in the water sometimes, especially in the summer, and I don't want to have to deal with getting mud and dirt into the carpet and then try to have to get it out later. Turf's just a lot easier.
Yeah, it is.
Those are my two big things, aside from looks. I like the way that turf looks over carpet. But what is your choice between the two, and what's your pros and cons to it?
Well, I'm from Arizona, and I'm from the hot parts of Arizona, not like the hottest of the hot. And EVA foam is the only thing that will take the edge. Like, if you even want to hope to walk barefooted on that deck, you are never going to do it with carpet past April or May. It's not a doable thing. And EVA foam, especially if you put it underneath the hatch and on top of the hatch, it could be 100, maybe closer to 105, even up from that, and you can still walk on the deck.
It's still comfortable, yeah.
It's still comfortable. It's got that little bit of relief, and it's got more relief than even 20-ounce carpet. You don't really see a lot of relief from 20-ounce carpet unless you get a nicer bass boat that has the foam underneath the carpet, hence the foam. So even, you know, the foam carpet is actually really hard to beat, but it's the foam carpet. It's the most expensive and the most tedious to put to put in, and then EVA foam in and of itself is just comfortable because it's foam right off the bat.
Yeah. Now, we get a lot of people that are interested in doing the turf, but they want a darker color, like a dark brown or a black.
Yeah.
And they're always scared that it's going to hold heat.
No.
And when we first started doing turf, I really wasn't 100% sure until we went and did the river run in South Carolina, and we got to get on a boat that had just straight black turf. It was a black diamond cut. Mm-hmm. And it was in the middle of summer. It was like 104 degrees outside. And I walked around on that barefoot for like an hour. And it doesn't hold any more heat than any of the other ones do. Like, it was actually comfortable.
I was surprised.
So now we've got some firsthand experience. You know, when people call and they ask about it, I'm like, don't be scared to put a dark-colored turf in your boat. It doesn't hold any more heat than a light-colored turf.
Surprisingly, and we don't actually have the science behind it. We just know that it doesn't, like, choose. That's the truth. It doesn't hold any more heat than, like, straight white turf.
Yeah. Speaking of white turf, that's another great question that we get a lot, is the staining of turf. Does it stain? And I can tell you that, yeah, the white does stain a little bit. But if you're careful about keeping your turf clean, like, if you're if you know, this is what I tell people, like, if you know that you're not a clean person and you're not going to clean your boat when you get back from fishing, do not buy a turf that is really, really light colored or white, because you get blood and guts and, you know, spike it dip bait junk all in there, and it's going to stain. But, like, on my boat, I have a light teak-colored turf, and I've bowfished in it and catfished in it. As long as I rinse it, you know, in a reasonable amount of time, like a couple of hours afterwards, and maybe hit it with a scrub brush and some Dawn dishwashing liquid, it comes right back to looking like brand new.
Yeah, I think the teak specifically, the teak and then the charcoal gray are the two types of kind of, what would you call it? The teak turf that do the best in terms of not attracting a whole lot of dirt and stuff to it.
I think
the teak specifically.
No, I'm opposite. I think it's the camos. The dark.
No, the camo, like, does better. But they're talking about the term, like, the teak.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that the actual brown teak.
Yeah, right? the dark brown teak with the black lines.
Yeah, but the grays, for some odd reason, it looks like, you know, they look a little dirtier.
They can
when
be.
They don't stain anymore, but they, like, in terms of attracting dirt.
And it's really a visual thing. So, like, if you're, like I was saying earlier, like, if you're a person that doesn't clean your boat often, you're going to notice that your turf looks dirty with those kind of colors. And those are the people that I usually recommend get, like, a swamp camo, a cobblestone camo, a duck camo, something like that. Because
you can try to get that dirty, and you can't.
They just.
I've never washed my deck off.
Yeah.
Like, with camo turf.
And the good thing is even if you do get them dirty, you can clean them up. I mean, yeah, like, remember Nate's boat, and he had that yellow turf in it, and it looked absolutely disgusting after a season of tournament fishing. Mm-hmm. And he got out there with his kids, and they scrubbed the hell out of it. It looked brand new when he got out there.
No, yeah, Dawn soap and a brush will scrub it clean. Yep. Yeah, I mean, that's firsthand testimony, because we've had people fight against us when we were huge advocates for carpet, and we'd have people say, you know, I have this stuff on my hunting boat, and I drag hunting gear and deer antlers and a whole body on there of whatever they got. And that stuff cleans off right away, and it's durable. And here I'm reading this, and I'm thinking, dude, it's foam. Like, who are you kidding us? Like, you can cut it with scissors. Like, you're telling me, like, deer antlers and hooks and tools and knives aren't going to slice it up? And then, truth be told, no. Like, especially the cut groove.
Yeah,
the cut groove is probably the toughest stuff. You really can just abuse it. You have to try to hurt it.
Even if you do, though, it's one, especially in the camo colors, it hides well.
It does.
If you do happen to do something. Like, I slipped one time when I was filleting a fish on my deck, which I shouldn't have been doing. That was stupid. But
you filleted a fish on your deck?
Well, yeah, I use it for catfish bait.
Like, right on the turf?
Yeah. I forgot to pull my cutting board out of the hatch. Like, I have a cutting board that I keep in my boat, but I was being lazy. And I caught a little brim, and I was going to fillet it out real quick so that I could use it for catfish bait. Mm-hmm. And the tip of the knife slipped, and I actually did cut part of my turf. So it's not bulletproof. It is still turf. It is foam. You got to keep that in mind. But I will say, I was able to go back in with a piece of like 400 grit sandpaper and just kind of lightly sand that area to where that cut was. And you can't even hardly see it anymore.
Yeah. So it is. Yeah, you can manipulate it with sandpaper.
And we've had a lot of people that use them in hunting boats, and they have dogs in there. As long as your dogs don't have sharp nails, like if your dog runs around on concrete a lot, their nails are naturally going to be smoother. And they're not going to rip your turf up. You're not going to have any issues. Now, if your dog goes to eating it, that's a different story. I've seen
dogs try to dig a hole in it and eat it. And then there's only so much that it can do.
Yeah.
So, but it's actually really easy to replace if it's cut groove, because you just cut down the groove.
Yes.
And you can put a whole new strip right in there. And I have done that.
And that's a great point that I was going to bring up at some point. Now that we're talking about it, we might as well just go get into it. So the installation-wise, like you were saying, cut groove is probably the easiest for a new person to install, because as long as the lines are straight, everything else, you can cut down the middle of those grooves and line that stuff up. You can cut. I've seen you slice it into pieces and make it go around corners and stuff.
Yeah, it's the most manipulative.
The hardest one is the teak to me.
It absolutely is. I don't know what it is about that thicker, like way less routed grooves in it. Just the thicker strips makes it very hard.
Yeah,
like it's like one end ends up being slightly thicker on one edge of a hatch than the other. It looks off, and you know, nothing you can do about it, because if you move it over, then it's not aligned. Yeah, it's hard.
I think
it's
hard. The cut groove is easier to stand back and visualize what's straight on your boat. So like when you take that first sheet and you lay it up on your deck, and you can kind of stand back and go, okay, yeah, it needs to go a little to the left, a little to the right, and then it's nice and straight. But the teak, for whatever reason, is like, it throws your eyes off, and you can never really tell if it's straight.
It's the size of the grooves, because like it doesn't matter if it's slightly off on one side. The groove is this big.
Yeah.
And you just can't tell.
Yeah.
You know, you can't. And a lot of these boats, they're not built straight.
No. God, I haven't seen a straight boat yet.
I'm having a lot of problems, like with one right now because of the lack of straightness. But
it makes it hard. And in those situations, for installation purposes, it's easiest just to throw it up on the deck and stand back and kind of look and go with what looks the best. It might not be straight in your boat. It might be off to one side. But if it looks good, go with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, just go with it. It doesn't have to be straight.
So, definitely.
Another one little point that I'll bring up, and we'll close this out, is the popularity of custom cut groove turf is getting there. It used to not be popular. Everybody wanted to buy the sheets and install it themselves, and now a lot of companies are doing the cut groove or the custom routing and cutting it. They're custom routing it and cutting it to fit your boat.
Yeah.
And I get this phone call a lot, is people are like, well, I'm scared it's too expensive for what I'm trying to do in my boat. And I will caution you with that, because a lot of these bigger boats, these 15, 16, 17, 18-foot boats, you wind up putting 5 or 6, maybe even 7 sheets of turf in it by the time you're done.
Mm-hmm.
And at $150+ a sheet, you almost wind up getting up towards the cost of having it custom scanned, and then it's literally just, you lay it in there and it's done. It's so much easier. But the time factor, what would you say your average time of labor in putting turf in a boat is?
With the cut groove?
Yeah.
An hour or two? Like, maybe an
entire boat?
Like, for the top deck?
For the entire boat, start to finish. You're going to put 6 sheets of turf in a Tracker 17.
If it's in all the compartments, then, you're going to dedicate a whole evening to it. You know, but the cut groove, I can dedicate a whole evening. If I'm trying to route it, then it's takes however long it takes. Could be done in a day, could be done in 3.
Yeah. Traditionally, our big boats that we do, 18, 19, I've done some 30-foot boats, they usually take less than an hour with a custom turf job because it's done
for you. Well, because it's already done.
But you then, just got to lay it all out, make sure it all fits, and then peel and stick. Peel and
just
stick.
Just has to be scanned. If you can Duralar or just template out your deck,
you can send it to us.
You can send it to us, and we can scan it and send you back paper templates.
Mm-hmm.
And if they fit, then we'll just send the exact same. If they don't, then send it back to us saying this needs a little work, and we'll clean it up. And we'll just make sure we get it right until you get the final version. But, yeah, then eventually you get turf that fits every panel perfectly, and it is very nice.
Yeah.
And
cost-wise, it is more expensive.
It's worth it.
It is worth it, though. Yeah. I have to tell people that a lot. Like, if you're going to, especially if you're new and you've never done it before and you're a little nervous about it, I tell people just go ahead, either bring it to one of our shops and get it scanned, and then we can either ship you the turf or we can install it ourselves, or get your templates done and send it to us, because it is a heck of a lot easier and a lot less frustrating, especially if you screw up. Like, I screwed up my first turf boat. And I still, to this day, I still like, man, I wish I would have been paying a little bit more attention when I did this. But you get excited, you get into a rush, and then you wind up putting something on really crooked, and then it's there.
It happens.
And I don't want to pull up a $150 sheet of turf and replace it, so it's still there.
It's a fact.
Any other turf things that you want to discuss or things you can think of?
I don't know. You want to show the new stuff HydroTurf's got going on?
So HydroTurf is basically trying to bring the custom routed turf to the average DIYer. So they have these new pro sheets, and they're just like the other sheets. They have the pressure-sensitive adhesive already on the back, but they come in all these wild colors and different cuts. Like this one right here, if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll be able to see it, but this is a hexagon cut with an orange underlayment. So all the pieces that have been routed show orange, but the top is black. And you also have a knurled finish to it, which is a lot different than the brush that we're used to with the DIY turf. But then they got all these other options. You got like diamond cut, they got razor cut. There's a whole bunch of them. The only thing different between the pro sheets and the regular sheets is the actual size of the sheet. They are a little bit skinnier and not as long. And that has something to do with the CNC processing of it. But so, like, your big DIY sheets, like the cut groove and the wide teak cut, are going to be 47 by 86. These are 40 by 80.
Yeah, these are also, they have UV inhibitors in here. That's another thing we've kind of forgot to touch on, is the quality of EVA foam is not the same across the board.
No, so it is not.
If you go get Amazon EVA foam and you put it on your boat, you just get what you get. And if that lasts a season without starting to powder up and oxidize, I personally would be surprised.
Yeah.
Even under a cover, it just goes bad. And
I've had some bad experience with Amazon turf on my personal boat.
I would use it in the inside of a compartment.
Yes. But if you're like trying to save money and you're on a budget, like inside of your compartments. And what I actually really like it for is trailers. I did my trailer bunks in it.
Oh,
I did my side sliders on my boat, my side guides. I did all that in turf. And then I made like a little walkway on my boat so that I can launch in shallow areas. Mm. And I did the whole walkway in turf. But it's all cheap Amazon turf. Now, I did have a problem with it sticking to painted wood, so I ended up having to put some contact cement down. But it was a fraction of the cost of HydroTurf, and it's not out in the sun. It's covered up by the trailer, so I'm
definitely
not super worried about it. And it's held up for, I think I've had it on the trailer for 3 or 4 years. Definitely not as pretty as the HydroTurf that we sell. But it works, and it was cheap, and then I was on a budget at the time. If I could go back and do it now, I'd probably put HydroTurf on it just so it matched my boat. But
all things are hindsight. You can always tell yourself that you're going to do it later and when you have to do it later. A few things we forgot to cover were, obviously, carpet and turf are not the only ways to deck your boat. We just talked briefly about some of the other ones. Obviously, the one is non-skid. We talked a whole lot about putting turf over non-skid.
Mm-hmm.
But
it's also a great option just to, if you don't want to put turf in your boat, or if you don't want to turf your whole boat, or you don't want to carpet your whole boat,
yeah,
that's a great option. Just fill in the cockpit or just the front deck or gunnel rails and things like that.
Yeah. I mean, at that point, like stuff like the paint on non-skid or the rubber non-skid or the like the marine vinyl.
Stay away from rubber.
The rubber non-skid?
Yeah. You don't want to
isn't all of it rubberized?
No. So you got a couple of different kinds of non-skid surfaces. You've got your traditional, what they call crumb rubber, which is a thickened paint that has chunks of crumb rubber in it. This is like your old Line-X style bedliner material.
And you don't want that? Why?
The rubber is soft, and a lot of those do not have as good UV protection
as
some of the newer ones that are out now. Also, that rubber is soft, so it tends to, especially if you're like me, like I keep my boat outside 24/7, that rubber expands and contracts in hot and cold, and it will eventually start to crack the surface of what you're using.
I didn't know that.
It's very durable as far as like running concrete blocks and wood and stuff across it. So it's great for a truck bed, not great for a boat. Then you've got a lot of these traditional or the boat-specific products like top coat and things like that that are non-skid, where you're actually painting and then you're putting a non-skid material in there, like silica sand is what a lot of people use. I've seen people do play sand, but there's going to be some kind of material that they actually put in there to provide that non-skid surface.
Yeah,
those are okay, but they're the most aggressive. So like you rub your arm up against it, it's going to turn your arm ashy because it will remove skin. Then you got your newer epoxy-based products like Rhino Liner, Aqua Traction, Monster Liner, products like that, where there's no filler in it at all. It is literally two-part epoxy, and the way that you put the texture on it is by rolling it on, allowing it to dry a little bit, and then when you run that roller back over a semi-dried, like Monster Liner or Raptor Liner, the epoxy actually pulls up into really tall peaks. It's microscopic. Oh, okay. You can't really see it, but then as it starts to settle back down, it forms those rounded texture kind of like you would in a modern day sprayed in bed liner. Now if you want to spray those, you can do those either with an aerosol, like Raptor Liner has an aerosol that's two-part. It's got a little button in the bottom of it. You push the button and it releases the activator up into the can, and then you can spray it.
Oh yeah.
So the way that works is as it's spraying through the air, it's kind of almost drying. So that's how you get your texture, is the epoxy is drying in the air as it hits the surface. It's still wet enough to stick, but it can give you that surface that you're looking for. And the way that you control your texture is the less you spray and the further away you spray, the more aggressive the texture is going to be. The closer you spray or the thicker you spray it, the more, I say, less
that
aggressive.
That sounds pretty advanced. Like you might want to practice on a piece of wood.
Yeah,
like, or something.
It takes a little bit of practice.
Just a little bit, like
Monster Liner's the same way. Now, I prefer Monster Liner in applications where I'm going to be doing a color match, because Monster Liner has like 200 something colors. So if you wanted to do, you know, red or blue or green or white or something like that,
that comes in a spray can.
Monster Liner does not, but you can roll Monster Liner on,
okay,
and it works really, really well. It's got some very specific instructions, though, so you need to follow them, like, to the T. Don't deviate from them at all. But you can buy a spray gun and put the Monster Liner inside. It's like a little can.
Yeah.
And then spray it. If you have a big enough air compressor, you can do it. And a Raptor Liner is basically the same process, but they have the cans already made up, and you just attach the spray gun to the can. You mix your hardener in there, and then you just spray it. Basically the same principle, just Monster Liner comes in a gallon, Raptor Liner, you can either buy it in a gallon and put it in a spray gun, or you can buy a spray gun that just attaches to the can. So, but it's a little bit different ways of doing non-skid. My personal opinion, Monster Liner, Raptor Liner, if you're like up north where you got Aqua Traction Liner, those would be my first three choices over crumb rubber style bed liners or the paint-ons, like where you put sand in it and stuff like that. That's just my personal opinion.
That's everybody's cool. I don't have any experience with it because we can't use it because it's too hot.
Yeah.
Like, but I know people do use it, like for roughneck applications or,
yeah,
or just, you know, basic, even cosmetic applications like sidewalls and stuff.
What I really like it for is if we've had to do a lot of welding in a boat and either the welds aren't that pretty or they're in a place where you can't grind them, you can spray that Mazda liner or Raptor liner in there, and it covers up a lot of surface imperfections. We've had some situations where we've had to, like, grind a big weld on the outside of a boat, and they got a little too aggressive with the 36 grit grinding disc, and it left some really deep scratches in it, and it was almost impossible to get out.
Yeah,
if you can put, like, Mazda liner, Raptor liner, Aqua Traction, something like that on it, those disappear.
Yeah, I could see that.
Absolutely.
That's disappear. Probably fantastic to have, because
they're great.
That happens almost every project.
There's
one or two spots where...
I know you don't have a lot of experience with it, but I challenge you that the next time you have a boat that you need to do the interior...
No, I'll definitely check it out, because, you know, then if doing the vertical walls or even the side walls of the boat with it would be pretty nice. I mean, that's just less turf I have to buy to put on the side walls.
We like it for the inside of hatches. So, like, when we're building a boat here, we do all of our framing first. We put the subfloor in, weld in all the framing. We get everything kind of set up to the point to where we can put the decks and stuff on.
Does it scratch anything?
What?
Does it scratch, like, your reels or anything if they slide around in the compartment?
No, they're fine. It actually provides them some grip so they don't slide around.
Huh.
But we'll cut the decking material and all your vertical walls and stuff and just put, like, one or two rivets in it so that we can get it measured out for turf. And then we uninstall all of the decking. We pull the trolling motor trays out. We pull the seats and everything out. And then we'll spray or roll on Raptor liner or Mazda liner on the entire inside of the boat. So that way all we've got to do is, if they want turf in it, we can just put it in the flat parts of the floor. We don't have to do the walls. And then we reinstall we do our wiring and stuff, reinstall the decks. And then once the deck's done, we'll lay our turf out, and anywhere that the turf is not going to butt right up next to each other, we'll just mark it with a Sharpie, sand that area, and then we'll Raptor liner or Mazda liner those little spots, and then we'll do the gunnels at the same time.
Okay.
So I love it for gunnels because
it looks really good. I mean, I've seen the pictures on the Instagram
and
on your TikToks. Like, they look good.
It makes touch-up a lot easier,
too. It looks really good with the routed foam.
Yes, it looks amazing with routed foam.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. So it's a good way to accent stuff. And then I would just say the last on my list would be marine vinyl. I think it's the worst. Don't get it.
It has its place, though. It's great in pontoon boats if you don't want to splurge on turf on a whole pontoon boat.
But they have that. Sparta Carpets even has that.
Yeah, we saw marine vinyl.
It's that cushioned vinyl topping. I don't know what it's called, but pontoon boats have it, and it's nice. It's like an actual. It's almost like carpet woven vinyl. It has it has foam underneath. We don't even talk about that. I mean, that says it's pretty heavy, though. Like, you'd only want to put it on a pontoon, but it makes no sense to put it in a small boat.
Well, it's easy because, like, if you're doing a full pontoon boat restoration and you've got all the furniture off of it and you just got a nice flat deck to work with, you take that trim edging off, lay that marine vinyl out, glue it down, and then put your trim back on, and you got the entire floor done.
Yeah, marine vinyl has its place for, like, jobs on a budget.
Yeah.
And that's really all I can think of. Like, I don't ever use it. For anything else, it's terrible.
It's great for pontoon boat, or if you got a big flat boat that you're doing that in. Two different men here. Yeah.
Like, with the thoughts there. But
definitely good stuff. And we got it for sale on the website, too, if you're interested in marine vinyl. It definitely has its applications, and we have it for sale.
That makes that carpet look better and better.
I hate carpet. I hate installing it. I hate ripping it out. I hate the way it smells. I'm just not a carpet fan.
But what do you do with marine vinyl once it wears out?
You have to rip it out.
It's the same thing.
You just replace it. I would rather replace marine vinyl than I would carpet.
It's the same process.
No. I can get on a big flat pontoon boat with a commercial belt sander I rent from Home Depot for a few hours and just knock it all down and put vinyl right back over the top of it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to see that. I don't know if I believe that.
That's called redneck engineering.
I don't know if you should believe that either, audience, but it's, you know.
Any other carpeting, turf, flooring, covering stuff that you want to discuss?
No, that's all I got. I'm glad we got it done.
Yeah. Well, I hope that answers some of the questions that we get a lot. If you have more questions or a specific question about your boat, feel free to give us a call. Our information is in the podcast. It's also on YouTube, on the website. You also email us. We get a contact email for technical support. They'll be glad to help you. That's going to do it for this one. What do we say at the end of every podcast, Mike?
Don't forget your drain.
Why should you not forget your drain plug, Mike?
I mean, for the obvious reason.
Water bad?
Yeah, water is not supposed to be in a boat.
Water bad, don't forget your drain plug.
Don't forget your drain plug, and obviously, you need to, I don't know. Shouldn't it be like, pull your drain plug? Because people are trying to drain the...
No.
They probably listened to us in a car, right?
Yeah.
So they're trying to probably try to drain. Drain? Never mind. I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that.
Don't forget the drain plug in or out. There you go.
How you think I can let that Senko thing go?
Oh, yeah. That's right. What did you use Senkos as a drain plug one time?
I have used it. Yeah.
Did it work?
Yes, it was a drain plug. I didn't forget it. It wasn't the traditional drain plug.
You remember those old rattle chunks that they used to make for jigs, a jig and pig?
Yeah.
I wonder if one of, I think that's the same exact size as a drain hole. I wonder if I could find some of those and stuff one in there.
I had to get like a whole thing of Senkos and stretch them through, like seven of them, and then cut them off at the end. And I only got a slow trickle of water.
Hey, that's better than a whole bunch.
Yeah. Now I got to go fish. So, yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for watching. Don't forget to drain plug. We'll catch you on the next one. Yeah.